Morning. The Bible reading comes from Exodus 11. Now the Lord had said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here, and when he does, he will say, he will drive you out completely. Tell the people that men and women alike are to ask their neighbors for articles of silver and gold. The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and Moses himself highly regarded in Egypt by Pharaoh's officials and by the people. So Moses said, this is what the Lord says. About midnight, I will go throughout Egypt. Every firstborn son in Egypt will die, from the firstborn son of Pharaoh, who sits at the throne, to the firstborn son of the female slave, who is at her handmill, and all the firstborns of the cattle as well. There will be loud wailing throughout Egypt, worse than there has ever been and will ever be again. But among the Israelites, not a dog will bark at any person or animal. Then you will know the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. All these officials of yours will come to me, bowing down before me and saying, go you and all the people who follow you. After that, I will leave. Then Moses, hot with anger, left Pharaoh. The Lord had said to Moses, Pharaoh will refuse to listen to you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in Egypt. Moses and Aaron performed all these wonders before Pharaoh, but the Lord had hardened his heart, and he would not let the Israelites go out of his country.
So if we can just go to our first slide, as we've said, we're going to be talking about the Passover today. If you were joining us for the first time, we are in a series on Exodus. And if you know anything about Exodus, maybe from watching the old Ten Commandments movie or the more modern Prince of Egypt or whatever, you'll know that there are certain stories that have kind of made their way into popular culture and that even people who aren't church people will know something about. So the idea of Moses being, you know, rescued from the water as an infant, and that's why he was called Moses, the one who was drawn up out of the water. Another really important one is the plagues. A lot of people know about the 10 plagues on Egypt. People are fairly familiar with the parting of the Red Sea, and every time a new movie comes out, we get to see, you know, a new version of what that may have looked like. And of course, you know, the 10 Commandments being delivered on Mount Sinai. But I think one of the very central events and stories is that of the Passover. And whether you were aware or not, you will be now, that the thing that we call communion or the Lord's Supper or whatever was taken from this night. It had everything to do about Jesus sitting in a room sharing the Passover with his brothers, with his friends. And we were having a meeting yesterday as elders, and we were talking about our services, and we got a lot of your surveys back, and people had the chance to have some input about sermons and services and all kinds of things. And one of the things we realized is that for some people, you know, a good sermon is a long sermon, and you can't have, you know, peel back enough layers of the onion, like just keep it coming. For others, it's like, well, I can only take in one or two things, and, you know, just please keep it simple. Today, I hope this will kind of suit the latter of those ones. If there's one thing, if you're a one thing person, if there's one thing that I want you to take away from today, is that the Passover is an extraordinary kind of meal and festival, because before we ever get to things like priests, because that hasn't been talked about yet. They're still in Israel. They haven't gone to Mount Sinai. They haven't been told about a priesthood. Before there was ever a tabernacle or a temple, because they haven't been to Mount Sinai. They haven't been given instructions about building a tabernacle or a temple. Before there's any kind of religious rituals, or before they're in their own land, this is a sacrificial meal done within homes and by families. And it's an extraordinary thing, because even when you go back to Abel and his sacrifice early on, that was just an offering. You know, today you might pull out a note from your pocket and put that in the offering because that's the way that you give back to God. But back in the day before coins, Abel offered a sacrifice. See, God, you gave me these, you know, lambs or whatever, and so I offer one back to you. When Abraham would do a sacrifice, it was usually to kind of seal a covenant. God would have made a deal with him, and it would be sealed in blood. But when we think about sacrifices for sin, we think this is something you need to go to the priest and go into the temple and have a sacrifice offered for you. But this was a sacrificial meal for forgiveness so that the curse that had fallen on the whole world and we see played out in all these horrible ways in the book of Exodus can be forgiven, and God will pass over you because of a sacrifice that you will make in your homes. And it was supposed to have things for the little ones to do. And, you know, the littlest one, when our daughter was very little, you know, she now has a little one of her own, and we had a special Passover meal. And she got to be the one who said, why is this day special than all the others? And why are we eating these strange foods? And to this very day, whenever we get together for any kind of thing where there's weird food on the table, she says, why is this day special from the other days? And why are we eating all these strange foods? And there were things that would get hidden that the children had to find, because the entire thing was, this is a family meal, and everyone needs to engage with the meaning and the purpose of the stuff that we can see around us. This was a sacrifice that was pre-temple, pre-tabernacle, pre-priesthood, done in homes with families and neighbors and friends. And it was one that was ultimately fulfilled, as you can see on the screen, when Jesus sat in a room with his friends, with his brothers and followers, to fulfill everything that we're going to be talking about today. So we're just going to do a quick review about what has happened before, because for us to understand this, we have to see what went before. And we know that the first time that Moses went to Pharaoh, and he said, the Lord, whose name is I Am, Yahweh in Hebrew, he says, let my people go. Pharaoh responds by saying, who is this I Am? Who is the Lord that I should even be bothered with him and listen to him? And one of the things that we're well aware of by the time we get to the end of today's reading, Pharaoh and everyone in Israel and everyone in Egypt and as far away as Canaan, where the Jewish people are going to be going, they've all heard about I Am. They all know who he is. And it's also a reminder to us that to this very day, it is our job to make the wonders of God known to the entire world. So God is placing himself, he is making himself known to the nations. And part of that plan is going to be done through these plagues. And Josh spoke to us about that last week, and it was really helpful. And I just want to give a quick reminder that this is not just a bunch of random plagues that God decides to impose on Egypt, but there is a plan and there is a purpose. And I'm just going to read to you from part of a passage that Josh looked at last week from Exodus chapter 9. After God had sent another plague, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron, and he said, listen to this. Pharaoh said, this time I have sinned. Pharaoh is aware that he is a sinner. This time I have sinned, he said to them. The Lord is in the right, and my people are in the wrong. God is right and righteous, and we are sinners, says Pharaoh. Pray to the Lord. I need someone to intercede for me. Pray to the Lord, Moses and Aaron, for we have had enough thunder and hail, and I will let you go. You don't have to stay any longer. And once again, God responds. And Pharaoh and the Egyptians are picking up on something. As one Bible scholar put it, the God of creation is the God of salvation. It's not the gods that we have made with our hands. The God who created the world and the heavens and the earth and everything in it, he is sovereign over all of these things. And yes, because of our sin, curse has come upon the world. Hail and fires and frogs and disease and all kinds of things. But the God who has imposed these curses and punishments because of sin can forgive us and take it away. It's the gospel. Moses is proclaiming the gospel. And Pharaoh and the Egyptians and the Israelites are starting to get it and pick it up. Pray for me. I've sinned, and I will let you go. Of course, we know that he's not going to really keep his word. But again, our job is to make the same gospel known. The God who created the whole world, we have sinned against him. We have fallen under curse. But the God who has brought punishment upon us is willing to forgive us. And he will forgive, and he can cleanse us from all unrighteousness, and he can make us whole. It's the same message today. But because Pharaoh continues to keep resisting and hardening his heart, God brings upon them the 10th plague. And again, this is not arbitrary. I want us to remember where Exodus began, right? Pharaoh saw the blessing of Israel, that they just kept prospering and having more and more children. Pharaoh saw that as a curse. Oh no, they're getting too big and too numerous for us. And so, first of all, he tried a secret plan to have them killed by using the midwives. But when that didn't work, he instructed his people. He instructed all of the Egyptians, the Egyptian nation, when you see that a baby boy of the Israelites has been born, take it and throw it into the Nile. And of course, when we look at the very first plague that came upon Egypt, what is it? Moses, God, turns the Nile into blood. It reminds us of when Cain killed his brother Abel and buried him in the ground. And God says, the ground cries out with your brother's blood. And God caused the Nile to cry out with the blood of the murdered innocents of Israel. And so that's where everything began. But because they are still resisting, God said, I'm now going to bring justice. The only way you're going to get this is if you suffer as they have suffered. And I've already brought hardship on you, O Pharaoh and O Egypt, but you haven't had to pay full justice. And because you refuse to accept my forgiveness, now I am going to bring the judgment on what you did to Israel. You took their children, I am now going to take your firstborn. And so that's what this is all about. So Moses said, this is what the Lord says. About midnight I will go through Egypt, and every firstborn in Egypt will die, from the firstborn son of Pharaoh who sits on the throne to the firstborn son of the female slave who is at her mill, and the firstborn of the cattle as well. And there will be loud wailing throughout Egypt, worse than has ever been or ever will be again. But among the Israelites not a dog will bark, or any person or animal. Then you will know that the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. And all these officials of yours will come to me bowing down before me and saying, go, you and all the people who follow you, and after that I will leave. And then Moses, hot with anger, left Pharaoh. Timid little Moses, who said, no, not me, is now growing in passion. He's watching the destruction being brought on all these people. And it's like when you watch a world leader who goes and invades another nation and the destruction coming upon his people and the destruction coming upon the people that he invades and the effect that it's having on the whole world. And you think, how arrogant can you be that you would bring this much misery on your people and other people and the people of this world? This story just keeps playing out. It's our story. It continues to this very day. And so we come to what God instructs the Israelites to do. He doesn't just say, don't worry about it, I'll take care of it. God's people have a role to play. And so this Passover is given as a lasting ordinance. I'm reading now from chapter 12, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in Egypt, this month is to be for you the first month of your year. Tell the whole community of Israel that on the 10th day of this month, each man is to take a lamb for his family, one for each household. And if any household is too small for a whole lamb, they must share one with their nearest neighbor, having taken into account the number of people there are, and you are to determine the amount of lamb needed in accordance with what each person will eat. To this very day, on the Hebrew calendar, what is called the month of Nisan, always in the middle of the month of Nisan, and so this because this is a lunar calendar thing, it always aligns very closely with our Easter holiday. That's why Passover and Easter still happen very close to the same day. And even though the Jewish nation uses the same calendar that we use for purposes of, you know, worldwide unity and trade and all of that, when March or April come along, based on what the moon is doing, the first week after the new moon at that season, that is still considered, on the Jewish calendar, this is month one, because this is where it all began for us. This is where the Jewish nation was born. This is month one, and everything follows on from here. And to this very day, all across Australia and all around the world, Jewish people around our Easter time will gather in their homes and they will take to this Passover meal. The interesting thing is that the lamb is missing. It doesn't exist in any home. All that they get put on the plate is a bone, is a lamb shank, as a reminder. Because there is no temple, there is no priesthood, and there is no sacrificial lamb. Or is there? We'll look at that in just a moment. And then we're told this from chapter 12, verse 5. The animal that you choose must be year-old males without defect, and you may take them from sheep or goats. Take care of them until the 14th day of the month, when all the members of the community of Israel must slaughter them at twilight. Here's the idea. A year-old lamb is basically a lamb that has reached full maturity. It takes a year for a lamb to mature, but it's not an old lamb that's on its last leg. It is at its prime. It is prime beef. It's prime lamb. And it's at its very prime, they are to bring it into the home for 4 days. Take care of it within your family home and then slaughter it. Years ago, I had a friend of mine who went with me to go. We visited his cousin on their farm. And so we were actually out in the lamb pen. And he said, I think we should have some lamb tonight. And he goes, so Chad, which one looks good to you? And I was standing by one. And I said, well, this one looks kind of cute. And I put my hand on it. And he went over, he straddled it, he pulled up its neck, and he slit it with his knife. And he said, sounds good. He threw it over his shoulder. And he goes, we'll have this one tonight. I felt a little bit responsible. And that night, when I was eating the lamb, I ate it in a different way. There was something special about what I was eating. I realized there was a sacrifice that had to be made. God's making this personal. It's not just have a lamb dinner. An innocent lamb will be sacrificed and shed its blood on your behalf. I need you to know the lamb. I need him to be perfect and without any defect. And I need you to understand that it's by the blood of the lamb that you are forgiven. Sacrifice is personal. And then we're told in verse 7 there to take some of the blood and put it on the sides and the tops of the door frame. Over the top and down the sides. And that night, they are to eat the meat roasted over the fire, along with the bitter herbs and the bread made without yeast, things represented here. Do not eat the meat raw or boiled in water, but roasted over fire. It's a sacrifice, with the head and the legs and the internal organs. Do not leave any of it until morning. If some is left until morning, you must burn it. And the point is that this is supposed to be a constant reminder. Not just tonight, but every single year at this time of the year, keep doing it. You need to keep taking the yeast and removing it from your home. That's another thing that happens at the beginning of Passover. The children have to go and sweep the house clean and make sure there's no yeast in it, because yeast came to represent sin, which brings about curse. And you need to get that out of your home. And you need to go and prepare the Passover lamb exactly the same way they've always done it. Do it year after year after year after year. Make sure your children say, why is this night all different from all the other nights? Why are we eating these strange foods? Why are we doing it in these strange ways? Keep telling the story. Because otherwise we will forget something really important. That all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and are justified freely by grace. If we get out of Egypt and everything starts going well for us and we start making money and everything, we're happy and healthy and wise, we may actually forget that all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God and that we needed a sacrifice and we need to still be concerned about the sin and the yeast that creeps into our lives and affects it. Keep doing it over and over and over again. And this is how we're to do it. We're told from verse 11, eat it with your cloak tucked into your belt and with the sandals on your feet and the staff in your hand. Eat it in haste, for it is the Lord's Passover. I mentioned that in one of the churches that I used to be in, they started getting a very kind of insular view of what the Passover meal was all about. And I noticed that the posture was just very much, you know, focused on, I guess, quite internal. You know, this is all about me and my internal spiritual needs. And right where we set up communion, it sat underneath the window. And I said, I want you to understand that this is also supposed to be a vigil. Yes, spend some time to search your heart and to confess your sins. But then I went over and I took the elements and I walked over to the window and I said, it's supposed to be eaten like this. It's a Passover meal. We're ready to be delivered. The curse of death is coming upon us, but God is about ready to deliver us. In the morning, we're going to be freed. We need to be ready. And whenever we eat these things, we're to eat them in haste. Christ is coming. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are you dressed and ready to go? Have you brought your families together? Are you ready? Have you prepared everything? And then I just want to read this as our epilogue. I'm reading to you from verse 31. And so during the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, up! Leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go and worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said. Go and bless me. The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise they said, we will all die. So the people took their dough before the yeast was added, and they carried it on their shoulders and their kneading troughs, and they wrapped it in clothing. And the Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and clothing. They're going to get back pay for their wages. And the Lord made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them what they asked for, and so they plundered the Egyptians. And the Israelites journeyed from Ramses to Succoth, and there were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. And listen to this, and many other people went with them. Some of the other surrounding nations and people said, I think we need to follow these guys and their God. And they also took large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. With the dough the Israelites had brought from Egypt, they baked loaves of unleavened bread, and the dough was without yeast because they had been driven out of Egypt and didn't have time to prepare it. And the length of time the Israelites lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's divisions left Egypt because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt. On this night, all the Israelites are to keep vigil to honor the Lord for generations to come. And here we are. I'm going to invite Philip to come up because in a home group, we have been exploring this passage by going through the book of Hebrews, which if you ever want a great commentary on all of these things, read the book of Hebrews. And we've been talking about Christ as our ultimate high priest and also as our ultimate sacrifice. So Philip's going to come and share with us, and then we're going to sing a song, and then Resh is going to come and lead us into communion.